Our sponsor today is none other than our Patreon members. You folks are bringing swords and HEMA to listeners worldwide, so thank you. To support our work and receive exclusive benefits, visit patreon.com/swordwomen. Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. I'm your host, Fran Laquarta, and I was kindly invited by the Schildewacker HEMA Group to teach at their event in Potsdam, Germany. It was a wonderfully relaxed weekend with knowledgeable and friendly fencers, and I took the opportunity to talk to some of the attendees. The event is called Swords of the Renaissance 2, and it took place on the 16th and 17th of October 2021.
Like, took better spot for night.
I'm a massive introvert, I hate live interviews.
Yeah, sure, Jay. So we're here at Swords of the Renaissance 2, and I'm here with two fellow instructors, Jay Maxwell of Tempest Fugitives, and Amelia Skirmant, my fellow instructor at the School of the Sword. Don't worry, guys, it's just a recording. You're not going to be on video. So we are each invited here to give a 45-minute lecture slash workshop on a particular concept. So I thought I'd ask my fellow instructors what they're going to be teaching this weekend. So I'll start with you, Jay, as you have the coffee in your hand.
I'm going to be teaching body mechanics in the Bolognese system. We'll be using spud on it because the extra weight forces you to... Everything okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Keep going. Right.
Because the weight of the blade forces you to use correct mechanics. Mm-hmm. We're going to be performing just very simple actions, but breaking them down into individual parts and considering how the use of counterbalance and the use of core muscles affects the action.
Excellent. And which sources do you think you'll be drawing from?
I'm not really using techniques from specific sources, but looking at the structure, the stance, which draws from the entire Bolognese corpus.
Using the Spadoni as the teacher.
Yes.
Excellent. And Amelia.
Yes, so I'll be teaching LARPing, but that's not true. I'm teaching Dalagokie fencing, so the noble way of fighting with the side sword. Mm-hmm. And we will be taking a bit interesting approach, because we'll be imagining ourselves as aristocrats in Renaissance Italy, just learning how to fence. So I hope it will be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun. I mean, we've only got each 45 minutes to kind of deliver a concept, which is a challenge, but also it is a convenience in a way, because it allows you to pick your mode or your method of delivering information to people. Like Jay, you're using the concept of the weight and the balance of the spadone for the movement, and Amelia, you're like, well, let's just pretend
aristocrats in Renaissance.
Snobby toffs with swords.
So. Well, the way that Stefan described it to me, which I think is a very good analogy, is that of a research conference where everyone is presenting their own research individually.
Just something to get the mind fired up and thinking about how we conceptualise fencing and how we understand how it works, rather than just, here's a technique, do it, kind of thing. I think other events have done something similar, haven't they? There's one in Sweden.
The Penguin Cup, I think, they used a similar thing.
Oh, in Norway, yeah, sorry. Yeah,
but obviously after lockdown, we didn't have a chance to explore it further. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very interesting way of doing things, and one that I think I'd like to explore myself more in future.
Yeah, it's a great idea for an event. Thank you both for talking to me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two instructors from Swords of the Renaissance 2. I have Malta and Chris from Quadratura del Secolo. Okay, Chris, can you just tell us what the project is all about?
The project is about La Verdadera Tristeza, mm-hmm. and we want to make it accessible. hospital for hemofences in Germany, because there is only Spanish and a bit of English content available. And so we try to get into Thibault and Rada, and of course the other authors like Carranza and Pacheco, to draw comparisons and to create German content like videos, blogs, and kind of small books.
And Malte, tell us about the workshop that you folks gave us yesterday.
Yeah, we gave a workshop on specific postures and distances comparing Thibault to Rada, where the postures are pretty similar and the distances are pretty similar, but in the same place they are pretty different in terms of maybe 5 or 6 centimeters that we are further apart, and the distances being measured from the crossguard to the tip and the tip in front of the guard in Thibault and stuff like this. And we just made it a little game-based and pretty accessible for beginners.
So the La Verdadera Destreza is, it seems from the outside, this is someone who studies Italian rapier, it seems from the outside, even for me, quite complex and about precision. Is part of your project's aims to make it more accessible to people and more appealing? And if so, how do you intend to go about that?
I think it's pretty complex, but I think that Italian sources are complex too. The main difference is the geometric and mathematical approach to Destreza pencil books. And there were authors in the past who tried to make it more simple as well. So we can make translations, we can make sum ups of basic concepts, and I think the point is to make it clear what are basic concepts, and you don't have to draw a line or a circle on the ground, but you can fence according to these concepts, and then you have access to this test.
Excellent. Thank you both very much for talking to me. So I'm here at Swords of the Renaissance 2 with Amelie Aelken, and Amelie is one of the 6 instructors at this event this weekend. And just tell us what your workshop was on this morning.
Yeah, we did a bit of Dussach, obviously according to Maya, because it's me, and we did some of the pieces from Fencing from the Bull. So Maya's treatise is divided, like first he tells you something about the weapon itself, about the division of the man and so on, then he goes on to general techniques, and then he talks about the different stances or guards, like fencing from the bull, fencing from the arc and so on. And we did some, I think, pretty cool pieces from the bull today.
Yeah, so you've only got 45 minutes to introduce a concept. How did you break it down?
Yeah, actually, I was like, okay, I would, you know, if I had a mind where you would want to tell it all, you would want to, you know, go through all of it. But then I was like, okay, we only have 45 minutes, so let's see how does he divide it. And you could clearly see there's like, the first part is what to do if the opponent attacks you. The second part is what to do if the opponent does not attack you, but you can easily kind of spot a mistake on the other person's side. And the third part is, okay, he's really hard to get to, what do I do then? And so we picked some pieces from all of them and kind of went with that.
So it's kind of like a tactical concept almost.
Yeah. I think so, yeah, because you're in that situation, you pick that guard. It's a good guard to start with because it allows strong moves, but you're like, okay, now what's the situation? And you have to know something for every situation that you are presented with, and he does that.
Excellent. And being part of the Borg, Hammerborg, you are the, I guess, the more advanced branch, being the Maya scholars, because I mean advanced as in temporally, because most of Hammerburg is studying the medieval period, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. So we're a bit further advanced. I know that that's, we're still, for the sources that were presented at this event, we're still more like the earlier periods. But for Hammerburg, we're usually like the
more
late
modern
boomers.
Yeah, compared to the rest of the group.
Yes.
And how have you found the whole weekend? Is this the first time you've been to this event?
Yes, it has been. I think it's charming. Obviously, the venue is great here at the castle. But also, the idea of like having multiple small workshops and then a lot of time for free play, I really enjoy that.
For me, it's been really nice to have a focus on a particular period of time, because all of the weapons that we're fencing with each other, we're very strongly encouraged to fence as many people as possible, and they're all weapons that would have coexisted, which is a fun thing to do, because normally when you go to a HEMA event, it's like mostly medieval stuff.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, the Renaissance geeks get to geek out and play with the Renaissance toys. So it's a nice combination of weapons, just about all the weapons I've seen this weekend. And the Dusak, of course. Why is that your particular favourite?
Ah, good question.
Or is it your favourite? I'm just guessing.
It is one of my favourites. I guess it's because I kind of like this flowy who strikes like focused thing, because he's very it's not so much like little movements and
it's
a bit
precision
here.
Based, is it?
Yeah, it's more like oh come on, get into it,
play,
just, yeah, let's just do this. And obviously it's a very, very fun weapon to spar with, because there's a lot of Dusaks out there you can get that are, for example, more of a foam side and so on, so you can get into sparring really quickly, which is great, especially for beginners and so on, I think. And that works well, because Maya said that's for learning one-handed weapons and for training the youth. So that's kind of...
the youth.
Yes. Well, we're young in fencing. I mean, we're talking here about a period where probably most people that these books were addressed to were learning fencing from a quite early age. So in that respect, we are young.
Yes. And at what point in his treatise does he say you should do the Dusak? Is that one of the first things he teaches?
It is one of the, like, it's the second part of the book, but he does say that in the preface to the Dusak. So it's...
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Ask me what's the lunch, what's the plate.
I'm here with instructor Jan Gooswinkel, and he has taught a workshop this morning on the montante / spadone. Tell us what your concept was for your workshop.
Hello, nice to be here. The concept was just optimize the reach of your thrusting, and the best way is to use it just one-handed. And to surprise the opponent with a 100 long thrust, where you have a half a meter more reach than usual. So
because we don't associate thrusting with the greatsword, do we?
It is. So it looks funny, and usually if I haven't done it by itself, it sounds quite of difficult. Wow, a 2.5 and or 3 kilo heavy sword, one-handed, but it's surprisingly easy, especially if you're doing just a quick thrusting motion and recovering quite fast. And the best thing is that you gain around about half a meter more reach, and so you usually do it out of range, and that's the way to score a point.
And this was according to Degrassi, is that correct?
The first part of the workshop was according to Pietromonte. Where you have this sliding motion where the right hand remains still at the hilt but slides back to the pommel hand, so that the right hand joins the left hand. Here gaining like 30-40 centimeters. And Degrassi, again, this is the one where we completely lose the grip of your right hand and can turn in your shoulder to optimize the reach. Yeah.
What I liked about the class was I've seen the Degrassi concept of the one-handed thrust. You're almost holding this 3 kilo sword by the pommel when you reach the end of the thrust. Yeah. So there's a lot of potential for personal injury, injury to the user. But the way you presented the information, it's a very, very strongly conceptualized way of making sure that your structure and your body mechanics work, not only for precision and keeping yourself safe from the opponent, but also to protect yourself from injury.
Yeah, it is. So, as I already said, one point is this thrust, a 3 kilo sword, is very dangerous for your opponent when you hit it. But, of course, you have to make your body structure in the correct way, supporting always the sword from beneath. Otherwise, your wrist, especially your shoulders, would be screwed up after training it too long. Yeah, but Degrassi describes all the stuff you need to remain this body structure in his work. So here's this famous picture in his book where he has this one-handed thrust If you pay attention to all the details, there's everything in you need in the correct position. It's quite easy, and you can do it, and your joints will be safe for the next 10 years if you train it. So.
Now, you are the mastermind, I think, behind the Montanti Symposium, is that correct?
The International Montanti Symposium was mainly organized by Drei Wunder from Bielefeld. Okay. They did all the organizational stuff, but 3 years ago, when Montanti was still not so common in the HEMA scene, not many people did Montanti training. It just spread around during the Corona lockdown when everybody started and picked up Montanti. And well, I was one who was connected to all the other Montanti instructors. So this was my part. I put all these instructors together, and my idea was the tournament rules. So, but all the other stuff has been done by the guys, especially Henrik from Drei Wunder Bielefeld, yeah.
Now, the coronavirus has put a lot of HEMA on hold, but I noticed that one thing that seemed to come back into popularity as a result of social distancing was Montanti. Yeah. Have you found that there's been an increased interest in the weapon?
Absolutely. Especially looking to clubs which never had an interest in great swords, picked it up because it's perfect. You can do it in solo forms.
Yes.
You are alone, so it's perfect. And even if you have partners around you, you have always a distance of 3 meters or something like that due to the long reach. And the main concept is not to kill the opponents, it's more to keep them at bay. That's the main goal here. So, yeah, absolutely, I think.
Someone described it as Renaissance tear gas.
Yeah.
You just, you know, disperse a crowd with a great big sword.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. I think the number of Montanteras tripled during Corona lockdown times. Yeah.
I noticed today, before when I went to a HEMA event, you'd see maybe one, maybe two great swords. They were a rarity. And then today with your workshop, they were just appearing out of everywhere, suddenly, all these great swords. I think with the social distancing and people doing lots more solo forms, it's very appealing. This event is probably the first post-pandemic event that a lot of people have attended. Yeah. Are there plans to recreate the International Montanti Symposium in the near future?
Here you have to ask Henrik and Drei Wunder. Henrik, if you hear this, we are waiting for it. What I know,
it's okay.
Henrik at the moment is focusing on other stuff, so it slipped out of focus from him, but I still try to convince him to do something like that again. But on the other hand, I'm sure there will be other clubs producing something similar. I'm in close contact with Nicola Menossi from the Spadone project.
Yes.
And we always are talking about maybe doing a very big tournament with many, many funny ideas for a tournament with a Montantero against a big bunch of different opponents in different environments.
Because it's a situational weapon, isn't it? All of the treatises give situations.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're building up like a parkour with a small street or a wide plaza, or you have to protect the lady or protect the treasure chest or something like that, or fighting on the gangway of a galley, so you can put all this into a tournament environment.
It'll be like, what's that show, American Ninja?
Yeah, a little bit like that, only the Spanish Ninja.
Spanish Ninja.
The Spanish Montantero, yeah.
Yeah. Iberian Ninja.
Just great fun. And it's even much more fun for the audience to look at this stuff. It's for me personally, it's more fun, more interesting than watching a one versus one longsword duel.
Yeah.
Because here it's just more action.
Yeah, not a great spectator sport all the time. Sounds good. Thank you for talking to me.
What a pleasure.
I'm here with Stefan Ubrowski, who's fresh from the fight, the very last fight of the weekend. Tell me, how's your experience been?
My experience with the last fight, well, I was too tired. But the overall experience of the weekend was great.
Yeah.
It was a great fun. I've missed it for a long, long time because COVID stuff. And yeah, it was a real pleasure to see old friends again, meet new friends. Yeah, it was great. And I'm totally exhausted.
So tell me, which club do you train with?
Jacques Amal. We're from Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And well, we exist under this name since 2000 and, well, about 2006, I think. Yeah, we are doing all kind of weapons. We used to be rapier and longsword, but it's all over the place now.
Everything.
Everything.
Is that a result of the pandemic, do you think?
No. That's a result of about 15 years development.
Okay, just getting into all the things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How has the club fared during the pandemic? Did you have to shut down or did you manage to keep training?
We shut down for a while. We met individually because that was the only way training was allowed for some time. Afterwards, we said after it was legal to train again in the open, we tested everyone in front of each training, and yeah, now we're training in parks because our venue is still closed down, but we're training.
So you're used to fighting outdoors this weekend.
Yes.
There's nothing new for you.
No. That's business as usual. What? And a nice touch. There were less mole holes.
Oh, it's a lot flatter here.
Yeah.
Better lawns.
Definitely.
Well tended at
definitely.
The palace. So what was your favourite standout moment of the weekend for you?
My favourite standout moment of the weekend.
When I stepped you right in the chest.
Being
yeah,
stabbed
that,
in the chest?
I got stabbed on the chest, yeah.
Okay. That's memorable.
That definitely. But it would be more memorable if it hadn't so often.
Oh, yeah. One of many, okay.
Yeah. Favorite moment of the weekend? If you asked me in a week again, I can tell you, but now it's just all
it's
fresh
just
and bam.
So much, yeah, it's time to digest it all.
Yes.
There's been a lot going on. I mean, it's a sort of a fairly small event with 50 attendees, 6 workshops, lots to digest. So
I can tell you my least favorite moment.
Oh, go on.
That was one today at the first workshop. My leg said, no, you don't.
Oh, dear. Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
You're very
welcome. Glad you had a good weekend. I'm just here with Lorenzo Braschi, who is attending from, you travelled from Poland, is that right?
Correct.
But you're originally from Spain?
Yes.
And I think you said to me you've been practicing HEMA for 11 years.
Yeah.
So tell me your, you know, your HEMA backstory.
So I started out in Madrid, just of course as these things get started, a friend started to doing this and say, oh, that looks cool. I always wanted to play with swords. Mm-hmm. I owe it to my 15-year-old self to play with swords. And that's amazing. So I started that.
Was that doing Destreza?
Yeah, Destreza. There is a club there, the Asociación Española de Esgrima Antigua, I mean, the Spanish Association of Historical Fencing, under the mastership of the teaching supervision of Alberto Bonprezzi, who was doing, still doing, mostly destreza applied to rapier, but also to longsword and to sword and buckler.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with moving to Poland, did you start your own club out there? Or?
Well, no. I moved to Poland about 6 years ago, and I wanted to keep practicing, of course. And there was a club. There was many clubs actually in Warsaw, but I got in touch with some people, and they were doing longsword, and say, okay, but I want to practice rapier. Is anybody who does rapier? No, okay. So what if I taught you some rapier? Okay, that'll be fun. There were some people interested, and that's a good start.
So you joined the club?
I joined the club as an instructor.
As a resident rapierist,
nobody was doing rapier. We had to start from scratch. Fortunately, many people were already equipped with masks and jackets because they came from a longsword background. Some people had never had any experience with that. Then I had to get the swords, or get my supplier in Spain to get it. So we got started with that.
And this is the first time you've come to this event, or did
yeah,
you go
this is actually this is the first time we started, because this is the first international version of this event, as far as I know. So this is the first time I'm here. It's kind of an amazing setting.
And tell me, what's your impression of Swords of the Renaissance?
Well, the setting is amazing for a start. We are in a fantastic palace, and it's just looks gorgeous, and being able to fence in this place is a privilege. I always wanted to fence here when I saw their videos, and it's like I was so envious, because it just looks beautiful. And also the community is very nice, very welcoming, very positive, very non-competitive, which I'm one of these people who likes my HEMA not super competitive, not this tournament we have to win, you have to win. I don't like that level of toxicity. And I find this here like a very, very scholarly, very friendly,
very relaxed. I found this event to be quite, like, the word that springs to mind is immersive.
Yes.
Because of the environment, because of the visual impact of these buildings, it's almost like you're stepping back in time.
Yes, we are. Well, this is 18th century probably, I don't know.
But even then they were trying to hark back to an older time.
Yeah, exactly. You have this kind of architecture, and you really get in the mood. So of course you have halberds, and you have pikes, and you have all the things, and it really adds to the atmosphere instead of being just another park in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
And tell me, what did you think of the workshops that were on offer this weekend?
I think they were mostly good to pretty good. I told you I was pretty impressive with yours.
Well done. That was the best one, wasn't it?
Of course. This is going to be edited out.
Yes.
No, but seriously, it was pretty interesting. It was kind of an appetizer of different things. I got to try Montante. I even managed to overcome my utter hatred for Dussek.
Wow.
Yes. And I have to say I hate it slightly less. I told Amelie this. It's like, yes,
the Hobbit Saber, as I
the Hobbit it. Saber, yes, as Ye calls them, yeah. And
She sold it to you.
Sold it. It's like, okay, this might be a point to this thing.
Okay, well, thank you for talking to me, Lorenzo.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm here with Stefan Eichelmann, the main organizer behind the event Swords of the Renaissance 2. Just want to ask you, Stefan, this is obviously the second event, but how did you come up with the idea for this event, and what is the concept behind Swords of the Renaissance?
Yeah, so hello, thank you for talking to me. The main idea of this event is to basically promote the Renaissance martial arts here in Germany. Because most German historic fencing is based on medieval longsword sources, and that not so many people who are doing his Renaissance stuff, and especially not as many people who do Renaissance stuff which is not Meyer. And our club specialized on the Bolognese sources, and we want to get more people into the Bolognese sources. And just before starting a whole big tournament, we wanted to try out how many people are interested in this. On another side, there are really nice events which we attend regularly, for instance, specialized on 133 and other buckler systems, the Berlin Buckler Bouts, which is a two-day event where people just come together and bout as much as possible, even low gear, no competition, and it's fencing with so many different people, which helps you a lot making your fencing better. And we wanted to do the same, but a bit more general for more kinds of weapons. And of course, all the weapons we like, which are all the weapons from the Renaissance. So this is the idea. At the same time, we want to bring instructors here to to basically give glimpses of the different styles, like if somebody likes the Spanish sauces, if somebody does the Italian sauces, and bring them together. This can start from rapier to maybe really big weapons like Spadone or Montante, but even things like daggers we might consider, or yeah, the small as the side sword, of course, which is the main weapon of us anyway.
Now, one of the biggest features of the event is the venue itself, which is absolutely stunning at the Potsdam University. Tell us about the venue and how it came to be the venue for this event.
Yeah, so we are super lucky with our venue. Our club started as a collaboration with the University of Sports, and the University of Potsdam is basically distributed over the whole city and are mostly in places where you have old Prussian castle and a lot of castle parks. And our main venue, our main hall, is very close to the Neues Palais, which is a guest castle of the big Prussian kings. And there's a really, really nice venue, which we discovered during Corona, that we can use it as an official venue. So we have nice columns where you can train even if it's raining a bit. And we have a really, really nice view, which is, could be directly from the plates of masters like Thibaut or Meyer or maybe even Capoferro and friends.
Now you've got a diverse number, a diverse range of instructors this year. Tell us about the workshops. I mean, I've interviewed some of the instructors, but tell us why you chose them and what kind of workshops they're going to be teaching.
So, first of all, as you already said, we have a very diverse cast of instructors, and it was super important for us to, first of all, not only have German instructors, but also not only have non-German instructors, so we try to mix it up. For by some chance, all the instructors which are not German came from Britain, but also for the future, we want to distribute this even more. At the same time, we want it to be also diverse to having female instructors and male instructors, because it's really important for us that to show that everybody loves this sport, and also to bring the people together who like to be taught by no matter whom. And then the other thing is we try to get as many different kinds of styles as possible. Now this time we had three classes on Italian masters, but we also try to get Spanish masters, and also now for the first time we have finally some Meyerists who teaches about German Renaissance stuff. And also we want to try to get all the kinds of weapons of the Renaissance, so from rapiers from later Renaissance times, but also the early rapier, or better known, the side sword, so best known from the Bolognese sauces.
And there's no competitive element at this event, it is workshops only. But you do encourage people to fence one another as much as possible. How do you think taking competition and the competitive attitude out of the event helps to improve people's fencing?
Yeah. So, as you said, we have some workshops, but the main focus actually is on fighting with each other and maybe talking to each other and discovering new things, new weapons. And the best way to improve yourself as a fencer is to fight as many other people as possible, because you will know what is working and what is not working, because in your club, usually you have the same people. You have some people who will always hit your hands, and you will some people where you are always able to thrust to the face. But yeah, it's really hard to improve yourself. And this is where fencing as many people as possible. On the other hand, being non-competitive means for us not to try to hit the other ones, but firstly, just try to not get hit. And even if you have fencing a few bouts with somebody, you should not be sad about getting hit. I mean, it shows you where you can improve yourself. And through the whole event, you will notice already some changes. So the beginning, maybe your hands get hit a lot from some other fans or from a completely different group, but you will learn to improve this certain aspect of your own fencing. And by just counting where you're getting hit yourself without focusing on hitting the other, is a different kind of competitiveness. And this is the kind of fencing we want to promote here, just to improve yourself and go through the whole fencing with a smile, even if you get your ass handed by the others. Yeah. And the fun is most important.
And a chance to make friends, obviously.
Yes, of course.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.